And that's a public hearing on order number R1-2014-0011 to consider adoption of proposed categorical waiver of waste discharge requirements for dischargers related to timber harvest activities on non-federal lands in the North Coast region. This is the time and place for a hearing by the California Regional Control Board, North Coast Region, to consider adoption of categorical waiver of waste discharge requirements for discharges related to timber harvest activities on non-federal lands in the North Coast region. This item has been properly noticed. Will all those who expect to give testimony in this matter please stand, raise your right hand, and take the following oath? Do you swear or affirm that you'll tell the truth in these matters? And I believe I've visually seen everyone, but it would be helpful for the record when you testify to indicate you have been sworn right after you give your name. Timelines for presentation are as follows. Staff, 20 minutes. Interested public, 3 minutes each. At this time, we'll start with the staff presentation, and I'll call on Jim Burke. And I want to thank the board. We made it right back, so on time.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. I'm Jim Burke, Senior Engineering Geologist in the Southern Timber Unit of the Regional Board, and I must say this is the nicest view of a presentation I can have behind you.
We cleaned up pretty well.
Not you guys.
Are you looking past us? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, the beautiful picture windows.
And I do want to know that we will not be so memorized by the tie that we'll vote whatever you want. We will listen to the words and the written material.
So this public hearing is to consider adoption of the proposed categorical waiver of waste discharge requirements for timber operations on non-federal lands in the North Coast. Proposed order number 2014-0011. This agenda item has been publicly noticed. And in your agenda package is the proposed order, public notices, comment letters we received during the formal public comment period, our responses, and there's a redline strikeout version of the proposed order that highlights changes we've made during the public review process. And in addition, each one of you have a letter from Allie Friedland of the Mottola Restoration Council that she sent in the last couple days, and she's here in the audience and will be speaking today.
Just to clarify the record, since that was submitted late, she'll have to ask for us to allow it into the record when she testifies.
Okay. In my presentation today, I'm going to give a general overview of regional board permits for timber operations. I'm going to talk about our outreach efforts that we did in preparation for the renewal of this waiver. I'm going to talk about the proposed revisions to the waiver and go over a summary of public comments and our responses. Just a brief overview and background of waivers for timber. State non-point source pollution policy requires that point source discharges be covered under a prohibition or waste discharge requirement or waiver of waste discharge requirements. From 1988 to 2003, waste discharge requirements were just waived for all timber operations in the North Coast region under Resolution 87113. In 1999, Senate Bill 390 revised Porter Cologne 13269 so that existing waivers would expire in January 1st, 2003. And that all waivers would have a 5-year expiration and must be renewed by the regional boards at least every 5 years. So in response to the coming expiration of the waiver in December 2002 and 2003, the Regional Water Board adopted interim waivers And then in June 2004, after conducting a series of public workshops, the regional board adopted two general permits for timber harvesting. And those were the general waste discharge requirement and the categorical waiver. Next slide, please. The general waste discharge requirement is pretty much the catch-all for most timber harvesting plans. The GWDR has no specific requirements other than that landowners prepare and submit erosion control plans in which they identify all existing controllable sediment sources in their logging area, and that they conduct 3 winter period inspections a year and submit summary reports to the regional board about those inspections. There was annual waste discharge requirement fees for plans covered under the WDR. Those fees were abolished by passage of Assembly Bill 1492 as of July 1st, 2013. We also had the categorical waiver that was for timber harvesting projects, kind of smaller timber harvest projects that were considered less impact and could be required a lower level of review. And next slide. There were originally 6 categories of timber projects that were waived. The majority of projects covered under the waiver are emergencies and exemptions and less than 3-acre conversions. There was also a category for plans that were in compliant with sediment TMDL action plans, modified THPs, non-industrial timber management plans, and THPs that meet a several specific conditions of the waiver. I'll get into this a little bit more. As I'm sure you all know, the NTMP category has been eliminated from the waiver. Just a brief history. In 2004, the waiver was first adopted. In 2009, the first 5-year renewal, there were revisions to the waiver in 2009, most particularly on the conditions for NTMPs and THPs, and that renewal was petitioned, and I'm going to talk about that in a second. And then in 2014, the second renewal of the waiver, which is what we're here for today. So just a brief recap of the petition. Following the 2009 revisions, there were 3 petitions for consideration by the state board. They were mostly over concerns over THPs, revised conditions for THPs and NTMPs. Following those petitions, the regional board engaged in with petitioners and other interested parties in a series of public meetings, focus groups, and that culminated in 2013 with adoption of the WDR specific permit for NTMPs. And those meetings that we held with the stakeholder groups and CAL FIRE and Board of Forestry were very productive, and I think it really helped forward the working relationship between timber, CAL FIRE, and other regulatory agencies, and we're kind of considered a model for how we can continue to work together and align forest practice rules and water quality requirements. So with that and the lessons that we learned from that process, when last winter, when we were considering the upcoming waiver renewal, we wanted to engage the stakeholder groups that we had worked with for the prior process, and give people a chance to see if they wanted to engage in a similar process. And we started out in November and sent out letters and emails to these stakeholder groups, and basically to alert them that the waiver was coming up for renewal and ask them some basic questions. First of all, with elimination of the WDR fees, and that removed a financial incentive for landowners to seek waiver coverage for timber harvest plans, was it still useful to have a waiver category for THPs at all, or would the GWDR suffice for all THPs? And if so, what modifications would people suggest, and what was the level of interest for continued stakeholder meetings and focus groups? We received very minimal interest. So we needed to keep the waiver for these categories, emergencies, exemptions, and such. So the waiver was necessary. And we basically decided to keep the waiver in its current condition, and that there was value in keeping this two-tiered general permit structure for timber harvest plans. So we just decided we would renew the waiver with kind of minor revisions just to refine the permit, which we sent in January 9th. We sent an early version of a revised permit to our stakeholder groups for just to solicit comments. We got two comment letters back. We had some phone calls with some of these folks. Based on the comments we received, we made additional revisions, and on February 24th, we released a public draft. Public comment closed on April 1st, and during that public comment period, we received 10 written comment letters, and I'm going to summarize those comments and our responses shortly. I'm just going to give a brief summary of the proposed revisions. Category C has been revised somewhat. It had previously only applied to timber harvest plans in the Garcia that were compliant with the Garcia River TMDL action plan. We've expanded this condition somewhat so that THPs can be waived if the executive officer has given written approval that plans are in compliance with an approved sediment TMDL action plan. So we just want to expand TMDL eligibility where appropriate. Category D for modified timber harvest plans have just been updated based on new forest practice rules for modified timber harvest plans that have been approved by the Board of Forestry and go in effect January 1st, 2015. Category E for NTMPs is no longer with us. There's the NTMP WDR for NTMPs. And the majority of revisions are for category F for timber harvest plans. And essentially, we've retained the same structure, the same general conditions, with just some revisions intended to, where appropriate, better align those conditions with the forest practice rules, to provide landowners a little bit of flexibility and just provide some additional clarity. When we had worked in the NTMP process with the stakeholder groups, a group of CAL FIRE, CLFA, California Licensed Foresters Association, Fish and Wildlife, California Geologic Survey. We developed a table where we could take information required for our erosion control plans, as well as other information required under the forest practice rules, and just use this in a consistent format to try to just avoid having foresters duplicate information. So just trying to come up with a streamlined format for providing required information. We canopy retention, we use the anadromous salmonid protection forest practice rules to meet those requirements with provision that when regional water board requests additional retention to meet the temperature objective, that plans have to include those recommendations. We've simplified the requirement for geologic evaluations somewhat just to provide landowners a little bit more flexibility so that if they, for example, are using an existing road on a deep-seated landslide, they would not necessarily need to hire a geologist, but there's still a fairly stringent geologic requirement. We've simplified the enrollment process somewhat, and we've simplified also the inspection requirements to be more in line with the new forest practice rule road rules that go in effect January 1st. And we've made a specific provision to allow restoration projects, small habitat restoration projects, which is something that we're very interested in, and we do not want our permit to be make it more difficult to do these projects. So I'm just going to go over some of the public comments we received and summarize our responses. As I said, we had initially conducted outreach to see if there was interest in holding a workshop or focus groups, and we determined that there really was not enough interest. But the people that were interested, we reached out to them and we engaged them quite a bit. We had numerous phone calls and we feel that the level of our outreach was appropriate to the level of interest. And I think that anybody who with an interest and who wanted to be heard was heard. And you'll probably hear that echoed in some of the comments that will follow me. We had a couple comment letters from primarily California Licensed Foresters Association saying that they would like all THPs to be waived, essentially saying that any THP that regional board has not submitted a non-concurrence with CAL FIRE, by our silence, we're acknowledging that it's basin plan compliant and that these THPs should be waived. And a lack of a non-concurrence does not mean that, well, all THPs have to meet the basin plan, and we review these THPs as part of the CAL FIRE review process, and then again during our permitting process. But under the, we have this two-tier general WDR and waiver structure, and so we think it's appropriate that the majority of THPs can go under the general WDR, and the waiver is really for THPs that meet these specific conditions. We had concerns that our waiver over relies on the forest practice rules, and timber harvest plans are a construct of the forest practice rules. They exist through the forest practice rules, and the way the system is designed to work is that we rely mostly on the forest practice rules, but we have our permitting requirements to where under our own authority, we can assure that each specific THP is compliant with the basin plan. And we think it's entirely appropriate to rely as much as we can on the forest practice rules while still retaining our own authority. Commenters said that because of the revisions, we should redo CEQA. And in 2009, during adoption of that waiver, we did a robust CEQA analysis. The current revisions are essentially very minor, do not make any significant changes to the to water quality, and it's appropriate to rely on the mitigated neg deck that was approved in 2009. And on March 27th, right before the end of public comment, we received a letter from Allie Friedland of the Mattole Restoration Council. And we had worked with the Mattole Restoration Council. They had received a state board grant to develop a programmatic timber environmental impact report in which they would landowners could sign up for, be involved in that and submit programmatic timber harvest plans that followed a set of prescriptions that we were involved in developing with them, and including a checklist for geologic considerations. The purpose of the PTEHPs is it reduces costs for landowners. It has a programmatic cumulative effects analysis, and the Mattole Restoration Council has presented to your board back in 2011, and it had been their understanding that there would be a separate waiver category for Mattole PTHPs. When we started the waiver renewal in this year, we were really focusing on the implications of the new timber reform bill and whether to retain a category for THPs at all. And we really were not looking at expanding the waiver. When Allie's letter came in, we took a look at that, and we met with our staff council, and we kind of investigated the options we had for including Mattole PTHPs, and came up with there was a couple issues to including that. One, the general waste discharge requirements has a provision stating that PTHPs would be covered under the GWDR. And also we were fairly far along in the public review process, and to make a significant change at that time would have had to essentially postpone the adoption hearing. And so we discussed with Allie Friedland about GWDR coverages, and pretty much determined that it was, we did an analysis of the differences between, for the landowners in the Mattole, between the WDR and the waiver, determined that it was a fairly minimal differences. Really, it came down to a slightly different enrollment procedure, and Allie was concerned whether her landowners could do the inspections or whether they would be required to hire a forester. And so we kind of looked at the language over inspection requirements in the WDR, and we've drafted a letter clarifying that landowners, when designated by their foresters, can do the inspections. So we think that it works for them to be enrolled in the WDR and not have a specific waiver category. And that is, with that, I'm going to recommend that the board adopt the proposed order, and that ends my presentation.
I'm going to make a very brief sort of analysis how we got to the different regulations over the years, so bear with me, but I think it'll get the board to understand why we're now using general WDRs as opposed to waivers, which at one time was the hottest thing in the world. We had 1958, Adolphus Moskowitz, Deputy Attorney General, held the discharge of sediment was a discharge of waste. When the legislature adopted the Port of Cologne Act, they made no changes in the terms and conditions, so that was held to go over. 1972, State Board held that the regional boards had jurisdiction. There was a huge dispute over an expansion of the Redwood National Park where the California Department of Forestry, at that time now Cal Fire, said they didn't have jurisdiction just to say no. So the Water Quality Control Boards intervened during this time period where it was authorized but not appropriated. You had a series of waste discharge requirements, but they were all just referenced in the basin plan. You can't exceed Jackson turbidity units above 20%, and the industry said, what's the point? And also at that time, waste discharge requirements were probably about 1 to 2% of the total timber thing. And it was just staff would say it's in effect, or staff would say it wasn't, and handled informally. So then you had Dr. Partain took over the California Department of Forestry and came up with an MOU to have Forest Practices Act declared best management practices, and therefore the regional boards waived them. And that lasted for 17 years, but the flaw in that MOU was that was based upon EPA concurrence, and EPA never gave concurrence because they wanted in-stream monitoring, not just upslope monitoring. So that forced the board back into general waivers. The legislature came through, and it wasn't just North Coast. It was generally, they said, we don't like these general waivers anymore. We want specific waivers, and we want times when they come up. And where the discharges were left is if they weren't covered by a waiver, there was tremendous uncertainty. There were high costs, and there was a high individual effort to get individual waste discharge requirements, and no one ever thought that was practically solved. Ironically enough, Elk and Fresh Water came up with a watershed-wide WDR, which has since grown to a general WDR, and they also overcame the provisions you couldn't specify the manner of compliance and figured out a legal way to do it. And that, of course, gave certainty, and then when the legislation passed, there's no longer the cost with the WDR. And clearly, if you look at the Port of Cologne Act, they would prefer WDR over waivers to regulate the discharge of waste, because the waivers had gotten, were actually what I call regulatory waivers. They weren't really waivers to get around this, and it provided certainty to the industry, low cost, quicker. So where we are now is general waste discharge requirements issued by either category or not is the most efficient, cost-effective way for the industry, for staff, and actually helps your environmental and other people to have a consolidated viewpoint. So that's why this is a lot less important, and that's why we have less interest. Before, we'd have the room filled on this. Now, more and more, we're having the room filled on the waste discharge requirement, general ones, and I think that fits more the act, and that's why this is a little bit of a regulatory relic. And I just say that so we have a sense of why we have it, how we got here, and how it's less important than it was the last time we did it. So,
well, that context really it helps put things in context. So, thank you.
With that, are there any further staff presentations, board questions? Okay, we'll open it up for the public hearing, and we'll call on Allie Friedman of the Mattole Restoration Council. And I just want to say, both Allie and the Mattole Restoration Council has been a leader on trying to get restoration or collective waste discharge requirements. And a lot of the progress we made was because of their pushing for, my personal knowledge is 11 years, is probably longer than that.
Thank you, and thank you for this opportunity to address you all. Allie Friedland with the Mattole Restoration Council. I was not contacted in that email part of, you know, submitting comments to the draft, and I admit full responsibility to getting to it late as one of the little things on my checklist that I had wanted to attend to. So hopefully you read the letter that I sent out, and if possible, you can please allow that letter to be submitted late from the Mattole Restoration Council that was submitted on Monday. Hopefully it was on Monday. The reason, you know, I'm a little bit conflicted because I have dealt with staff and I understand that things have changed between the general waste charge discharge requirement and the waiver. The reason I'm conflicted is that it's that the waiver category F still exists, that there's still a waiver category C for TMDL approved plans, that there's still a modified THP waiver. And I guess I would love to have direction from the board to acknowledge somehow that there are these processes that propose a lot less impact in terms of waste discharge and should be incentivized somehow through your permitting system. When I found out that there was just a really little difference, and I kind of worked with both Jim and Fred about what that difference would mean, they said, well, it's just this one inspection. Well, one inspection's a lot for a Mattole landowner, and we tried for 4 years to develop something that would incentivize a lower cost, streamlined process for landowners who essentially do the right thing. Just briefly, the Mattole PTEIR not only does not allow harvesting of any tree over 165 years old, but ensures that landowners are growing older forest stands over time. It's in the actual permit. In addition, Mattole PTIR has wider stream buffers, including extra protections on Class 3 streams, does not allow herbicides, and has an extensive procedure to determine the avoidance of impacting geologic instabilities. In addition, the Mattole PTIR won the 2012 Governmental's Environmental Economic Leadership Award under the Ecosystem and Watershed Stewardship category. This is the highest honor we know of in the state of California, and the nomination included 5 letters of support, including one from Matt St. John, who I quote, "The Mattole Forest Futures Project offers an incentive in the form of a more streamlined regulatory review process for landowners to adopt forest practices at a standard that exceeds the legal minimum, which will promote the recovery of impaired beneficial uses and meet Clean Water Act standards in the Mattole watershed." I see that I have a red light. Can I continue for just a little bit more?
Very briefly.
Okay. So in my addressing the board, I'm conflicted because I originally came here saying we really want this separate category. We were promised this separate category when we worked with staff in 2011. If the separate category really doesn't mean anything, then why doesn't it mean anything? Why is there not a permitting process through water quality that actually incentivizes better forest stewardship? We are different than an industrial timber harvest plan. We are not just a regular THP. It is a discredit to all our work and all the effort that went into this, including all the state agencies, the consulting foresters, the stakeholders, the state funding. And anyways, I would like to see that there would be a difference, and I was hoping that the waiver was going to be that difference in which we tried to meet, and we were not even asked to be commenting on that part of the process. So thank you.
Thank you for your patience.
If anybody has any questions, I welcome them. Anybody have any questions? Okay.
Charles Ciancio.
Chuck Sancho, registered professional forester, been around 50 years in the field. You got the rural landowners whipped, okay? You, all the other folks. No one's listening to what I say, so I stopped giving input. That's why you got minimum input. I think the folks have just given up. 80% of the wood used in California comes from out of the state, and that percentage is getting higher. Small landowners are economically out of the game. Just my comments here. I didn't know what I was going to be saying. Pretty words and confusion take a lawyer to interpret what is legal and not legal. We got all kinds of special interests giving you all kinds of input. And the small landowners kind of been left out of that. Timber harvesting does a lot of good things that are being ignored. And I'll close on this. Full and proper use of natural resources, timber, means less uncontrolled fire, disturbance that supports many species. There's many species that are not being helped by what you folks are doing. More carbon sequestration, healthier rural economies, and I'll leave you with two stories. There's a poor lady trying to buy shoes for her kids. She can't do it because the domestically produced shoes cost too much. There's a preserve in India that's been trashed. The limbs have been cut from all the trees to feed the elephants. And lastly, there was a fellow visited us from India, says, geez, look at all the waste by all the driftwood on the beaches. And the reason for that, somebody said, was because we got all these other ways to supply what we need. We can leave the driftwood on the beaches. Now, we're headed to that spot, and I don't understand why we keep regulating, especially in California, the way we're going. Small landowners are gone. I work with them all the time, and they just can't economically make it go of it. So I'll just leave you with those thoughts. Anyway, this exemption is, I think, a good thing. I don't know. I haven't read it.
Thank you. Drew Koch, California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection.
Good morning, Chair Corbett, members of the board. My name is Drew Koch, and I'm representing the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection. I've taken the oath. Our comments today concern the Category F portion of the proposed timber waiver, specifically Condition 6, which calls for buffers that require 65% canopy retention within 200 feet slope distance of all watercourses. The department has concerns with this Category F condition for several reasons. Condition 6 sets a new standard for the thermal protection of riparian areas with no technical justification as to why the existing standards in the forest practice rules are insufficient. 200 feet is unnecessarily wide for all watercourses. For example, Class 3 watercourses generally do not have flowing water during portions of the year where thermal impacts are potentially the greatest. Yet the standard of protection is the same as for a perennial fish-bearing stream. It's anticipated that the potential impacts of forest management on water temperature will be pursued with vigor by the newly formed Board of Forestry's Effectiveness Monitoring Committee. The department's silt slope scale monitoring data collected from 1996 through the present as part of the hill slope monitoring program, the modified completion report monitoring, and forest practice rules implementation and effectiveness monitoring, also known as 4PRIME, indicate that post-harvest WLPZ canopy requirements, that the implementation of post-harvest WLPZ canopy requirements are very high. The next logical step for the committee is to verify the effectiveness of WLPZ requirements for thermal protection at the watershed scale through in-stream monitoring. Rather than creating new standards for riparian protection, we ask that you assist us in developing these studies to verify the effectiveness of the existing standards codified in the California Forest Practice Rules. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Are there any board member questions, comments? Okay. Does staff want to comment on the particulars? Why don't you step forward? And I think we got we only have one good mic, so.
Okay.
It's not off with your head, it's more off with your mic, no.
Jim Burke again. That condition six, the waiver originally in 2004 basically did, there was no clear cutting allowed. So in 2009, we wanted to try to expand the base of landowners that could get their plans waived. So we came up with a condition saying allowing clear cutting if you stayed far from streams. That condition was somewhat complex, and this version at this time is just we've simplified it and we've actually reduced that. This is not intended to be a buffer for temperature control. It's not intended to be a water course buffer at all. It's just intended to be a condition allowing clear cutting under this waiver, and it's essentially a fairly precautionary approach, but the canopy retention we use the forest practice rule standards for canopy retention for protection of temperature.
Right, thank you. Does Cal Fire want to briefly respond or just stand on your testimony?
Both marks work.
Oh, they do? You made a liar out of me.
Yeah, I think just in reading through the findings, that condition six, it was alluded to that those buffers, and I think they were actually referred to buffers in the bullets, were in response to thermal protection. And of course, you get more than just thermal protection through leaving some sort of buffer of one kind or the other. But you know, the previous waiver was 100 feet for class threes, and 200 feet, you know, is quite a step up. You can sit and debate the necessity of 200 feet for twos and threes. You know, there's a lot of fuzzy uncertainty regarding that. But for class threes in particular, where you have the potential, if you're discussing thermal impacts and you generally do not have water flowing during the time of the year when those impacts are the greatest, I kind of question the need for widths of that magnitude.
Okay, thank you. Feet. Unless you, do you have anything further? And then I want to cut it off. Okay, well, thank you both for.
Thank you.
I have Mitch Hunt, CLFA.
Good morning. And I'm here, Mitch Hunt. I've taken the oath. I'm here on behalf of CLFA. First of all, thanks for coming to Fortuna, and we appreciate the work that we get to do with Matt, Mr. St. John, and his staff. It's very interactive. A couple things with the waiver. The resolution to Irene had some words in it that resonated deep with me, and that's good, meaningful work. We acknowledge that there is a need for two different permits. But in this permit, or some of the constraints are concerning. Number four, regarding the geologist, we know when we need a report from a geologist, but for small landowners, there's lots of times on the PHI that the CGS geologist can look at a situation, something very small on an unstable area. It might be the removal of just a couple trees and make the decision that the full-blown geology report's not required. And so we would like to see an option that if CGS counters or overrides that need, that's acceptable. Number nine, the no log hauling in the wintertime disincentivized landowners from rocking their roads. We spend $10,000 to $15,000 a mile to rock roads so that we can operate them on stable surfaces during the wintertime. In trucking logs, and so and in the GWDR, that really isn't a concern. I mean, it's listed there, but it's so covered and restricted in the harvest plan that we feel that log hauling under forest practice rules in the wintertime, as noted in the harvest plan, is something that should be permitted in the waiver. Number 10. No timber harvest activities in the wintertime precludes a timber faller from walking in the woods and cutting trees to get ahead of log schedules, wildlife restrictions, several other restrictions that we need to be able to cut trees early in the season so that they're available when we can actually get the equipment in there. And then the sediment production plan is basically a subset of the THP. And so we'd like to see maybe it revised, the waiver that there's a checklist that you're looking for to be in the THP that would be the same as the sediment plan, and therefore we don't have two documents. Because as a forester, I consolidate the harvest plan so the LTO gets the high points, and the sediment stuff is already in the harvest plan, so a separate document gets confusing. So it could easily be incorporated into the harvest plan if we knew those bullet points that are shown to need to be exist in the sediment savings plan, they're already in the harvest plan, especially here on the North Coast. So, and something that would be really, really good and helpful in this waiver is that at the end of a PHI, with the water quality staff at the PHI and in attendance and they've seen the plan, is to have them the ability to say, you know, this is something that's normally GWDR, but after reviewing it, you know, 1,200 feet of road or, you know, a couple CGS allows this or whatever, that they could override and say, we concur that this could be a waiver, although by the statute it's a GWDR. So that would be something very flexible added to this. Other than that, we really appreciate the work that Jim has put into it, and thank you for your time.
Just one question.
Sure.
Some of the stuff you had on coordinating with the timber harvest plan checklist, can you make sure you get that in an email to our executive director? Because we're going to meet with the Board of Forestry, and that's something we might, I want to investigate the issue, but that's
absolutely
something we might want to
so
seriously
consider.
So
the sediment savings plan as far as the THP? Sure, absolutely.
Because I think if we're getting the same information, it's always handy to have it in consolidated.
Yeah. Great, we appreciate that.
Any board questions? Okay. Jason Poberko.
Jason Poberko, RPF. Before we start the clock, I'd like to just take a quick second and not use up my 3 minutes to thank Jim and staff for all the work that they've done on this. They've really incorporated a lot of the public comment to which I'd really like to commend that effort. So I have been sworn in. I've been working under the jurisdiction of this board for almost 15 years now, and I've been dealing with waivers, as this board may know, since about 2009. And I'm very supportive that this board and staff have continued to take our comments and continue to carry a waiver moving forward, especially for the other categories, not so much just Category F, but all the simple categories of operations that deserve to be waived. I think there are some points of clarification that need to be met, is that even though this waiver has a very long-winded title, that it is clearly recognized by this board as a waiver for silviculture as defined by 13269 in Port of Cologne, and that point is clear for the future moving forward. My largest concern, however, is the silvicultural biases that are applied, that I know that there's been some work to incorporate clear-cut silviculture into this waiver. The 200-foot, whatever zone we're going to call this, special consideration, is completely unfounded in any of the research. It's completely unfounded in any situation of a problem that is attending to fix. It's not a sediment issue, it's been clearly described to staff as not being a temperature issue, as was just talked about. And it's not a sediment issue because the monitoring conducted by the Board of Forestry and this board has not shown there to be any problem with the existing buffers. So before any motion would be accepted to approve this order, I would hope that someone on the board would move to strike that 200-foot zone. When we talk about, you know, you were talking about the history earlier and the fact that the forest practice rules were originally certified as interim BMPs in 1988. And since then, the board had submitted comments in association with the other four boards that look at timber. And I went back and looked at that July 6, 1999 letter, and there's no introduction of this concept of this 200-foot buffer for clear-cut silviculture for all watercourses. It's a complete construct. I recognize that it's a precautionary principle,
But it's a precautionary principle when no fear or problem has been demonstrated by the, any of the agencies involved. So I would ask that somebody on the boards strike that. In closing, I'd like to correct one point by Jim, that there any suggestion that there's a two-tiered compliance or evaluation as to whether or not a timber harvest plant is Port of Cologne compliant. I do not have a photographic memory, even though my memory is quite sharp. I believe it says at the beginning of most PHI reports that the function of the PHI is to test the THP for Port of Cologne and basin plan compliance. So it does occur during the approval process of a THP. It is not a standalone approval at the end. So every THP that is approved by the state of California through CAL FIRE with Water Board PHI reports or lack of non-concurrence has been tested prior for compliance with Port of Cologne and basin plans. Thank you very much.
And could you actually get those letters to Matt St. John? I'm sort of a history buff on these different letters and logging and would love to make sure
staff has this letter on record as that's who I got it from.
Oh, okay, good. Well, I'll get it from them then.
Thank you.
Thank you. Felice Pace.
Felice Pace, on behalf of the North Group Redwood Chapter of the Sierra Club. I wasn't going to speak on this. I think I did put in some comments at one point, but some of the things that were said caused me to come up and want to comment. The FPRs, the CAL FIRE guy, and all the people, and you guys are going to meet with him, and I hope this becomes a topic. FPRs are not certified as BMPs. That's the problem with accepting the FPRs as equivalent or as sufficient. And we've been through this so many times, you know, and so I hope this will come up when you meet with them. And I was on the committee, actually, the Board of Forestry Committee, with Bill Keir was running it, and when we were trying to get them certified. And the problem, as I remember it, John, was a little different. It was that the monitoring, the hill slope monitoring, was not systematic, that they weren't taking a random sample of THPs in the hill slope monitoring. We're both going to have to go back maybe and look at that a little more. But, you know, the
I
fact...
I think we're both right. I think that was
okay.
Another ground.
The fact is that they might have wanted in stream as well. The my memory's not as good
and
as
and there
that
were
last
two
guy.
Rejection letters, and it's in one and not
yeah,
the other.
Yeah. So, you know, that should be fixed. I mean, it can be fixed. A monitoring program that is scientific, that satisfies EPA, you know, they accept our THPs. This can be done by CAL FIRE, so I hope you'll do it. Also, hauling on gravel roads. There's good science on hauling on gravel roads, and it delivers, the mud comes up through the gravel and it delivers. I think, the young lady that did a lot of the work on roads, Leslie Reed, I think one of her studies was specifically on those gravel roads. I remember it. I am a little concerned about, you know, I support this waiver because, you know, if you're low threat and you're doing extra stuff, and I support, you know, the precautionary principle use in this because they can go the other direction. They can go to the general if they don't want to use this one. But to use this one should really be for low risk kind of stuff. And I'm a little concerned about the part about the new thing about compliance with the TMDLs, sediment TMDLs, because what's there? I mean, is there something going to be in the record? And my experience is that all that's been required in the Scott, and we're 7 years into the Scott or so, six, seven, whatever it is they've requested that the timber companies put in erosion control plans. It was a request. So what I'd ask the staff to tell a little more to the board and the public about what's going to be involved in determining compliance with a sediment TMDL.
And then you need to finish up?
I know. And that was the end of my list.
All right. Well timed.
Thank you.
And we have... Claire McAdams, representing FLC and Buckeye.
This is impromptu, so I did not get sworn in. So.
And then you got to reintroduce your name. For
all right, Claire McAdams.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you. Very quick comment in response to the last comment that you heard. I would just remind you that for non-industrial landowners, you always have to consider cost, and if you're going to look for more monitoring, that increased costs, and that is a disincentive for best stewardship. Thanks.
Thank you. I believe that takes care of all the public comment cards. Okay, I'll take it back to the board. Does the board want to ask staff any questions, or do we want to proceed to motion?
Mr. Chair, maybe I could have Jim speak to a couple points. I thought it was interesting the point that Mr. Hunt brought up about if CGS could override the need for Note 45 PG report. Do you have any comment on that for, you know, small features or something that may be deemed insignificant to not have a landowner go through the full motion of a Note 45?
I sure do, and I really spent a lot of time looking for some flexibility on that one, including talking with CGS staff, including their upper management in Sacramento. And the problem is that there's typically informal pre-consultations with agency staff. We go out on pre-consultations, but we can't, CGF, our reviewing agency, and we can't formalize them as part of the process for permit compliance. So it would be great to have a process. I had kind of tossed around some draft language, including CGS can come out. I'm a licensed geologist. I could potentially come out, but I review these plans, so we can't use agency reviewers as compliance mechanisms for the permit.
But you then could potentially hold the authority to make that determination yourself, though. Or do you?
I discussed that with staff counsel, and it. I don't think it's really possible. I mean, other than before they submit the plan, we can always go out and do an informal process. But to formalize it as a permit requirement, I don't think that would work.
And that was as features defined by Note 50 through the CGS mapping program.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And then the other question I had was regarding the 200-foot, as commenters would call it, seemingly arbitrary buffer.
Yeah, I mean, originally we had, in 2009, we had put 300 foot on class ones, 200 foot in class two, 100 foot on class one. That was kind of we started with the FEMAT rules and just kind of took a stab at tailoring those to this process. The waiver, it's intended to be lower impact projects, and the 200 foot, it is somewhat arbitrary, and it's just, you know, it's above and beyond forest practice rule minimum requirements. It's kind of a first cut of a. I know we have the 200-foot requirements for skid trails. There's this kind of a 200-foot buffer, so I just that's kind of a large area. Just keep the more intensive harvesting on lower slopes and 200 feet away from water courses.
Okay. Thanks.
This is Matt St. John. I just wanted to emphasize the point that Jim just made, that this is not across a THP. It's only on slopes greater than 65%. And staff do think that it's appropriate to provide added protections on steep slopes like that for clear cut operations.
It's on slopes below 65%. There's no clear cutting on slopes above 65%.
Okay.
So
I'm confused now. So looking at, I'm on the strikeout version on page 17, item 6. And so on those portions of the logging area where slope gradient exceeds 65% or within 200 feet slope distance, maybe it's the or that I just got hung up on right there. So that may have just answered my own question.
Excuse me. You were right.
That's right.
Yes.
It's only slopes greater than 65. It's as it reads.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Jim, can I ask you a couple of questions? For one, I think there's regulatory evolution happening here, and that we've come a long ways in several years, thanks to not only you and our staff, to the regulated community, to the registered professional forester community, to the Board of Forestry and our other sister agencies. Just to get to Allie Friedland's comment, you know, the Mattole Restoration Council has a process in play that, in essence, that they invested time, effort, and money into as a way and a mechanism to do what they to work the land, but at the same time be sensitive and cognizant of the Mattole watershed. And I applaud that, by the way. I think that that's a fantastic thing. In some ways, though, I think that in a big way that this comes down to the fact that the evolution has happened in, say, like the NTTMP process that we went through. And it's further reflected in this, that this process seems to be evolving. In fact, I think it continues to evolve. And I wanted to acknowledge that Mattole River, the work that's been done by the watershed group in the Restoration Council. I think in some ways, though, it is a process that remains in play while evolution has happened around it. Not to disincentivize the Mattole work in the Mattole by this council, because I think it's very important. And I wanted to just let you know that. I think that from the standpoint, Ali, of the work that's done there, the procedure and process that's put in play, I think it's absolutely valid. I think we continue to evolve. And I say that holistically as this whole process. And I just wanted to recognize that. I wanted to, though, also address the letter from Board of Forestry, and actually Mitch Hunt brought this up about the sediment prevention plan. George Gentry recognized that, you know, the looking for efficiencies, if an erosion control plan that's already in the forest plan, in the harvest plan, could meet this requirement, and I know that we're going to have a workshop with Board of Forestry that's coming. Certainly, I think that should be something, again, as a efficiency and an equivalent on that. Whether we do it here, I'd like to see how the outcome of when we meet with Board of Forestry on workshops. Certainly encourage efficiencies. The other thing that George Gentry brings up is just concurrent inspection during notice of termination, that it could work also for inspection purposes here, to just encourage efficiencies. I do want to applaud staff and the work that's gone into this process, that continued evolution. So, thank you.
You're welcome.
There wasn't really a question in there, though. I recognize that.
Can I?
Yeah, answer it right now.
Can I answer anyway?
Yeah.
Yes, you can.
George Gentry his comment was that there should be a provision for ECP requirements should be folded into THPs, which is something that we've always wanted. And the map point table that we developed, and that's an attachment to this order, is that exact mechanism. So George's comment was that's already included in there. Mitch Hunt, I believe, was suggesting that there should be a similar mechanism for the sediment prevention plans that are required under Condition 11. And Mitch, where were you 4 months ago? But that's a good idea. I mean, we want to find ways like that where we can, we certainly don't, it's not in our interest to Absolutely. Have foresters duplicating their, you know, cutting and pasting text and making these 400 pages THPs. So that's a good idea.
Well, let's request this. Let's put it on our agenda, things to look at with Board of Forestry in the upcoming caucus, and let's get that on the agenda. And if we can do that, let's do it.
Agreed.
Great.
Okay. Well, let's have it on the agenda, although I like a staff analysis every one of these, you know, going in to make sure. I just wanted to clarify from the record, I Didn't get a request from Matole Restoration Council to allow their letter in the record, but I'm going to order it deemed part of the record. Other board member comments, questions? Okay, do I hear a motion?
Just one small point, Chair Corbett. This is Nathan Jacobson, Council. On page 11, number 36, and it's just a housekeeping issue, really, under the CEQA compliance, the strikeout of determination and replacement with exemption should be reversed. It should read that the board will file a notice of a determination.
And I'm sorry, go over the page again.
I'm sorry, 11.
11. Okay, no one, I think,
but. Page 11, number 36.
So essentially, we should ask for a motion as per the amended staff recommendation.
A motion per the recommendation, yes, right, exactly.
Okay, so we need a motion that would be per staff as amended.
Mr. Chair, I would give you a motion as stated.
Do I have a second?
Mr. Chair, I will give you a second.
Okay, thank you. I believe this is voice vote.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say nay. Abstentions? The ayes have it. Thank you. I'm going to want a 5-minute break.
Thank you.
I'm going to call the meeting back to order. I wanted to issue one clarification of our vote, but I wanted to make. Okay, thank you. I wanted to issue one clarification about the board vote, but I want to read it off and make sure no board member disagrees with it. I'd like to clarify that the board understood the restrictions associated with condition 6 of category F as written. The board does not approve the order, including condition. The board does. The board did approve the order, including condition 6 as written. And does anyone on the board have a different understanding? Because otherwise, I'm going to rule that's what we did and entered into the record. And the basis of the problem is we had 2 staff oral comments, and they slightly varied. And we wanted to make sure the written text carried the day over oral staff comments. Okay, I'm going to deem that's a finding of the board. Thank you. With that, we will go on to the next